Podcast 13.4. Have you seen that drawing of a horse where the horse is well drawn and then it gets progressively less well drawn? Yeah, it was that. Alright, so last week's game column was like, I don't trust this. And for once in my life, it was prescient.
I think Michigan fans were you know, enjoying but having an understanding that this might not last and that all this might just be a little bit of a mirage. Like, one of the questions I think was Michigan running into Washington's line just because that's what Washington was giving us, or were they doing it because that's just what they want to do and they're going to do it no matter what? And I think we now have an answer to that.
We are, of course, talking about a 20-13 victory over Rutgers. That was a tale of two halves. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher, and the MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor, offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products, and I was just in there yesterday. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentlemen Coders, Signal Wire, and Prentice 4M, which is where we are right now.
So I guess we should start talking about the offense, because that will be the point of major contention.
Is there any contention?
Well, I mean,
what's the question now? I mean, put Josh Geddes in the Kerry Coombs room and just rule out the season?
Wow. Well, let's actually describe what happened.
Okay.
So we have a 17-play drive on the first drive from scrimmage that takes more than half the first quarter.
Right.
15 runs, mm-hmm. 2 passes. They roll down the field on an explosive drive the next time they get the ball. They've had 2 drives. They got 14 points. Feels like the avalanche is coming. And then they just kind of start sputtering. So they get a couple of field goals. One of them on a game theory decision that we're going to talk about in the third segment.
one of a few.
And but they go into halftime. They've got like 230 yards or something. I got 20 points. You're like, this feels fine. This feels good.
Yes. On review, it looked worse than like some of the problems that were going to come up in the second half were very much present in that 17-yard.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Rutgers, after the first drive, tightens up, and there's a bunch of, like, 2-yard runs and stuff like that haven't really been happening to Michigan so far this year, and you're like, okay, Rutgers is presenting more of a test than I think maybe some people thought. I thought it was possible because Shiano's a good coach and his defense is pretty weird. Let's go in.
Yeah.
Make some halftime adjustments, see what happens. And then they go into halftime and they come out and it's 3 and out.
There was
4 straight.
Yeah. There was one when they actually decided to do play action and got a pass to Cornelius Johnson, and then they sputtered again. But like, these were like, they were getting set up like in good field position because, you know, they kept on getting good punt returns. We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Well, and then, while we'll talk about this more in the defense section, when Rutgers has the ball, they're doing all kinds of college bullshit. Right?
Yes.
Like, they've got the quarterback running the ball. They're throwing, like, swing passes to their running back. They're throwing 5-yard outs. We'll talk about that.
And screens.
You're looking at all this stuff that a team that doesn't have a lot of talent is pulling out of their box of tricks, and it's working because it's really hard for Michigan to keep up with all this stuff, especially when their defensive tackles aren't very good. And then you look on the other side of the ball, and they get a bash run with Blake Corum, I think, in the fourth quarter, and everybody is like, that's the first run
out
to the edge
in
this game.
Yes.
And there have been no screens.
Nothing.
There was
Not even, they didn't even run the guys out there just to, like, you know, create the, just to make those safeties a little bit afraid of coming in on the box.
There's just absolutely no misdirection that meant anything. There was some misdirection.
Play action.
Well, but
yeah, but yeah, in the run game, yeah,
because you know you've got the quarterback who's like, "Oh, I'm going to keep the ball." He's like, "No, you're not going to keep the ball,"
unless there's a safety double blitzing your edge. He's not keeping the ball.
So the thing that we had been talking about in the first few games is it doesn't really look like these are real reads.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, and someone wants to stack the box, there's a free hitter.
Yeah.
And that's been the innovation in college football in the last 20 years, is removing free hitters from the box by using your quarterback as a run threat. Michigan doesn't do that. And so when Rutgers is like, all right, we're going to stuff you up, then Michigan does do a couple of things. They hit some RPOs. They hit that nice dig to Johnson on play action.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of continuing with that,
they just run into the line.
Right. And I think, obviously, the targeting call on Patterson. On McNamara just before the half, I mean, that was night and day, right?
Because
he was like 8 or 9 before that.
Yeah, and he missed one read before that.
And then he misses a tight, he misses Schoonmaker in the end zone right before the end of the half. And then when he comes out, he's like 1 of 5, I think, in the second half.
And they're not even close. These are just terrible throws.
Well, the one to Sainer still was a little bit low and should have been caught, but the other ones were just like straight up IANs.
Yeah.
Like inaccurate passes.
Yeah.
Maybe there is something to that idea that he wasn't right after he got hit in the head, but like...
Does that really
absolve a coaching staff?
No, I mean, that's worse, isn't it? That's like, you got a guy who's like buzzing, and what did they tell him to go in there? Did he not say anything? Did they not ask him after a couple of those throws? Like, hey, you know, finger in front of the eye, how you doing there, man? Like, we've got other quarterbacks.
Yeah, and so there's just this absolute morass in the second half where Michigan's interior run game is getting stuffed up, and there aren't any answers.
And
you brought up the Army game, and I'm like...
Yeah. It's exactly the same thing. Rutgers does every play what Army was doing for Michigan. It's just like those swaps on the edges, right? And this is the second straight year that I'm... Like, I hate saying this because it's so self-aggrandizing that, like, I would have been talking nothing about this week but the fact that Rutgers runs this weird defense. And this is what they do. And this is how they fold their guy in.
Oh, self-aggrandizing.
Self-aggrandizing.
Okay.
We know this is a problem. I don't know how to say words because I learned how to
couldn't figure out what you were trying to say.
I don't want to toot my horn or pretend that I know more about football than these
guys.
That's
exactly what you're about to do.
And that's called a paralipsis, I believe. No, but I mean, there's got to be some explanation other than they didn't watch Rutgers film and don't understand that they run the stunt 43, right? Like, because they seemed very unprepared for the stunt 43.
Well, I mean, I think they were prepared on the opening drive.
Not really. Like I said, like in the opening drive,
they were moving guys,
and so they were getting a little bit extra because they're moving guys. But a couple times, Corum broke tackles, Haskins broke a tackle. They were delivering a free hitter to the hole after 1 or 2 yards. And the first play worked fine because Bastardus actually, I thought, made a really good play on that center who is always just trying to angle inside.
No second.
They always do that. And they got Bastardus a whole bunch of times with that.
They did. That's something that really leapt out is that, so we've been talking him up for most of this, and he really kind of struggled against the cock nose tackle.
Yeah.
Like, that guy was just swimming by him on a regular basis.
Yeah, but I mean, that guy is a 270-pound dude, and I know he got knocked out, and so they had to use the backup later, but that guy was beating him too. But I don't think that was like a Vestardus can't do it. I think it was they just wasn't prepared for it.
I don't know about that.
I mean, you kept on being surprised when the guy goes across him. Like, he's doing this to you every play. Yeah. I mean, so that... Those were issues, and I saw those on the first drive, and I thought that, like, you get into the second half, and you go, okay, running back, look, if that linebacker's pinching in like that, bounce him. I mean, he's testing you. He's asking you to bounce outside. Go for it, right? And they didn't do that either. I think there's going to be a bunch of negatives for the running backs for, like, just going forward. Corum, at least twice that I know, skipped the – he tried to, like, jolt forward before All had made his lead block. And, like, that's not something we've seen from them at all yet. These guys have gone, like, three games with, like, no negatives whatsoever.
Yeah, there were some bounces that were there to be had, and there was a certain frustration there because, like, they're jamming up the middle so much. Like, after you missed the first bounce,
mm-hmm.
like, maybe someone on the sideline's like, hey,
mm-hmm.
like the edge is there for you, Blake yeah. Corum. Like, well, like, we I don't know if we saw, like, any, like, down G, just something quick hit to get outside the tackle there.
And they saw
just
down G one time in the first drive on the touchdown play. And it works. It works beautifully because it hits quickly. It kicks that guy out before he can get back inside. You have another lead blocker for their second guy. Down G would have worked against these guys all day.
And there's a lot of speculation about, like, exactly what is going on with the offensive brain trust right now. So you have, like, Gattis up in the box, and you mm-hmm. have Harbaugh with a play sheet. And I don't believe that Josh Gattis is calling this offense. I just don't.
I can imagine that he's calling the plays. I think that he – that I don't think that he – I'm saving this for my hot take where I really want to go, but, like, Gattis, I don't think is designing. I don't think he's the one saying, let's have fake reads. I cannot imagine that that's him.
Yeah, we don't have reads. We don't have screens.
Right. We have RPOs.
There's the occasional RPOs. We saw an actual RPO.
Yeah.
It worked pretty well. That was the Wilson catch.
The Wilson catch and the Samersil catch at the end of the half that got us down to got us down there too. That was the same play. So both of those were that simple RPO slant, which was there most of the day because they were bringing their safeties down and bringing their linebackers around the outside. And, like, this is what Rutgers does. This is, like, their entire tape is doing this again and again and again. And it was there. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, play action, you saw how every time Michigan went play action, McNamara had ages back there, and he was able to find somebody open. They did that one slant where they just made a diamond formation on one side and just gave Cornelius Johnson all the room underneath, and, mm-hmm. like, that worked. But that was, like, when I talked about that play, that was a 2nd and 8 because they had just had a bad play in the first. So I think that they put that stuff away in the second half when, I mean, you just need to go out and maybe they're right. Maybe they realized they only needed 20 points to beat Rutgers. And well, they're like, okay.
I mean, they had
put
that,
it away.
They had that, like, conversion on 3rd and 8 or something where it checked to a Corum run because uh-huh. it was like a light box and everybody was standing up and, like, they caught a couple of guys backing out after threatening to blitz. And then in the second half, there's a similar situation and they just run into the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you got away with it once, but, like, now the situation has really changed in terms of, like, how effective your ground game has been.
Yeah. And at this point, Rutgers has adjusted to some of the cutback lanes that were there, I think, early on, that they actually managed to cut back against everybody because Rutgers was just throwing everybody to the front side.
Mm-hmm.
I clipped a couple shots already that I'm sure are going to make the UFR, where there were 9 Rutgers players attacking the front side of Michigan's play. And, like, you know, just a couple guys on the backside and with a tight end and a running back. So, like, there were those cutbacks. And then Rutgers, I think, got better at stopping, at closing that down. And I think that was those two plays before the 3rd and 8, which just, oh, my God. Like, that was some heavy booing from a fan base that was absolutely correct. Like, I hate being the hot. I hate, like, being on the side of the fans who are booing the team. But, like, that was—they're
not booing the team. They're booing the decisions play call, of the coaches.
Yeah. But, like, that. I mean, obviously, Michigan took Rutgers for granted, right? Can we say that?
I don't even know. Like, it just feels like they ran out of ideas. And, like, it's not like you don't. You might come into a game and be like, "All right, we're going to keep stuff in the barn." But then it's not like you haven't prepared stuff, like,
right?
So I kind of feel like you keep some cards concealed, and then there are points at which, like, all right, we got to pull out some cards now. So that doesn't make necessarily a lot of sense to me. What makes sense to me is, like, they just didn't have any cards.
I mean, I understand maybe very late when, like, Cade has given you nothing, and you're like, okay, we're just going to have to win this on the ground. And then, I mean, the one card they pulled out was the bash play, right? And it works. But, like, at that point, I mean, they've practiced other plays. They have other plays that we've seen them run. That, you know, Washington was attacking their edges, but Rutgers was leaving it open. Why is nobody saying, hey, you know, speed and space, we've got all the space out there in the space, why are we not doing this?
Right, AJ Henning doesn't touch the ball.
Yes.
Like, what are we doing? Like, how do we have a game plan where we don't have a single touch for AJ Henning?
Who is lightning. I mean, the guy, his punt returns were great.
Right. And like, have we seen a jet sweep this year? No.
Yeah.
We've seen that end around a lot, but maybe that's something you don't want to pull out for a third straight game or whatever, but there's got to be some way to get this guy involved and get to the edge and like loosen up the box. And Michigan was like, no, thank you. I don't want to do that.
And like, you've got guys like Samer still and all who are really good blockers in space and have shown you that they can do it. And I mean, like, maybe they got scared because Washington was attacking that so badly, and like NIU just, you know, made it. NIU was not going to let them have that either, so they just took it out of the game plan. But
NIU was going to let them have everything, right? So it didn't really matter,
right? But the way Rutgers was attacking us was asking for that. The way like they're rolling their safety down to have him be an extra man in the box, and that guy was just involved. You remember how many times you saw number zero, like. You would be surprised if someone told you that guy was not a linebacker because he was in the box every single play.
Yeah. And, I think that was a safety blitz, but there was one fill he had where he was like charting like he was in the backfield as a safety.
Yes.
And I was just like, all right, well, maybe that's not great. And then the same play, like the nose tackle comes across Vastardis, and I'm just like, all right, that's two guys crunching a guy in the backfield. And it's just like, harsh wake up call. It turns out that no, you can't just run inside the tackles and have that be a really good ground game.
Yeah.
So back to the drawing board, and hopefully they can get some things figured out. But yeah, it looked great and it felt great because Michigan was just paving people. And when that didn't happen, there was not a plan B, really.
It's blowing my mind that you didn't think that Rutgers, who plays like this all the time and does this every single game, this is their defense, was not going to attack you in exactly the same way they attacked you.
Well, let's take a break and talk about the other side of the ball.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
The Dean Rolfe and Cedar Runs.
This from Prentice 4M. They just took over Lucky's and want to thank everyone from MGoBlog who participated in the survey to help them decide how to make that space a place where fans and athletics can interact. Their building at the end of the Stadium Street Bridge is already up and running, and it's a modern, affordable place to stay if you're coming into town for a game. So some additional concerns on defense. This was a team that entered the game having rushed for about 2.5 yards an attempt against Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
Not that much better against, who was their opener? Temple.
Temple.
And yeah. Michigan really struggled to hold up this game. And part of that, yes, was the fact that they were on the field for really long stretches. But it really felt like they were rotating all these defensive tackles. And you know the saying mm-hmm. about how if you have two quarterbacks, you don't really have one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have eight defensive tackles, you don't really have two. Like, you get a play here and there, but all those, like, inverted veers, like, right up the gut where the quarterback's pulling.
Mm-hmm.
Those defensive tackles have been erased. And
yeah.
So you're getting five or six at a pop. And then for whatever reason, they're not covering the flats against Rutgers. I don't understand.
Well, they were covering them the same way they've always covered. So the first play of the game, they're all over it. And there were a couple other times when, like, I think Rutgers just missed throws, but there were guys who were going to take
it. Well, no, I'm not talking about the wide receivers.
But you're talking about the running back.
No. I am talking about the fact that whenever Rutgers wanted on first and 10, they could get 8 yards by running a 5 yard hitch.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is like, what are we, how, like you are talking about how, like, did we watch the film of this team? And I'm like, did we watch the film of this team? They hit one seam route
yeah.
to their tight end for a touchdown against Syracuse. And everything else has been short. They got like a 40 yard touchdown from Bo Melton against Temple. That was a 5 yard hitch.
Right.
That he turned into 40 yards. And, like, what is going to happen to you? Did you get so spooked out by the fact you got hit by a back shoulder on their first throw of the day that you're just going to be like...
A vastly underthrown back shoulder.
Well, that's a good back shoulder. That's what they're supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, like, that was one. If Green had looked up and seen it, that he, like, you know, maybe would have been able to, like, stop and intercept. But those were mostly under Green. Green was the guy that hit with that. And then,
But everybody.
I never saw it happen to Gray.
You're just playing off,
mm-hmm.
and you're gonna come up and tackle, and you're way too far off, so you're tackling after 3 yards, and like it just makes no sense. Because if you just dare them to throw fades, I mean, we saw what the other fades from Vedral looked like in this mm-hmm. game. They were nowhere near.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they did it in the red zone, and that worked. So just the constant like. Array of easy, no challenge passes. Like, there was another one that was going to be complete, except Jeter knocked it down.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There were, how many of those were there? There were probably six or seven, and each of them is just like, here's a free first down because we know your defensive tackles aren't going to hold up on second and third down.
And fourth. They're going for it every. Yeah.
I mean, it just makes no sense. And then, as we mentioned before, Rutgers was doing a lot of really annoying things,
mm-hmm.
like swings to Pacheco, where, you know, he's. Got that straight line speed, so Michigan's linebackers, it's hard for him to get tracked down by them, and then he is going to get 2 or 3 yards after contact.
Yeah, he actually stiff-armed Dax Hill, so like he's the first team that's been able to edge Dax Hill one time at least.
And all the like Johnny Langan stuff, and like they had yeah. they had a lot in their toolbox that they were bringing out.
Some of it which they hadn't practiced very much, like their fourth down play, like when they tried to bring, they brought down Isaiah Pacheco to, I don't know if this is the next segment or not, but like.
That's probably the next segment. So we're gonna hold off on
They Rutgered themselves, and that's one of the points here, is that like it was worse than it looked, because Rutgers Rutgered themselves several times here, and also Michigan had to make a whole lot of great plays on defense after they'd been out there a long time. Aiden Hutchinson was rampant in this game.
He was. And Nakai Hill-Green came up with a couple of really important sticks mm-hmm. on third and fourth down where he's sifting through some traffic, and Michigan's defensive tackles have held up well enough for him to get around and get contact at or near the line of scrimmage. Two consecutive plays, and then Hinton actually comes off on the fourth down play, actually gets off a block
yeah.
and hits the quarterback. So that's something that we have some frustrations mm-hmm. with what's going on, but all the substitutions, I think, you know, were helpful because this was a game where you had your starting nose tackle be able to come off a block on a critical fourth down in the fourth quarter in a half where your offense is literally doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dinking and dunking their way down the field. So you've been facing a lot of plays.
Yeah.
So that did pay off in the end, even though it was extremely frustrating. I think we're going back to some more preseason type expectations for those defensive tackles, though, where
Fair.
It's just like they're surviving.
Yeah, and I thought Hinton actually might have done a lot better, but like they were rotating him out. So when he wasn't in there, you got Jeter. Jeter was kind of up and down. There were some great plays by Jeter in there, but I also thought I saw him maybe moved by doubles more than other guys. Smith was like fine. Like I think the two starters are fine. They just can't leave them in there all the time. I don't remember seeing Whitley at all.
No, he didn't play.
Yeah.
So that might have been an issue because at least you'd get 10 or 15 snaps where that guy's not going anywhere.
Right.
So yeah, they got Welsh off in there. They have Jenkins in there. Those guys really aren't ready yet for being defensive tackle function.
I mean, I don't know if Welshoff ever will be. He's going to be like a third down defensive tackle, I think.
Yeah.
And then Jenkins, no one is expecting Jenkins to even be on the field this year. So anything we're getting from him is bonus. And like, yeah, he's going to get blown out by doubles because he's still on his way up.
And then they lost Ross at halftime, and Ross had a mm-hmm. pretty good game. Before that, he was able to flash in the backfield for a tackle for loss a couple of times.
That was a hell of a play he made in the near the end zone.
Yeah.
Like that was the linebacker play of the year so far.
And he goes out, so you've got Colson Mullings mm-hmm. rotating in a lot. That goes not as well as having Ross out there did, so that's maybe another explanation for what happened in the second half.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it has to be mentioned. Someone at some point is going to have to call holding on Aiden Hutchinson, right?
I was waiting for you to be the one to say it because it was, yeah. The two in a row when they like grabbed Hutchinson like was blown by a guy and was about to get a sack, and then like they're just all over him. And then the next one was even worse, where like the guy is just jumping on his back and taking him down, and it's like, come on.
Yeah, there was a play I think on Rutgers last drive where they just had the slot receiver just blindside him,
yeah,
and knock him over, and I was like, well, at least that's legal.
Oh, and there was another one too on their 97 or whatever yard drive, the really long drive they had, where Michigan pretty much had them down because Hutchinson had made an amazing play in space to like pressure, bring it inside, and then bring the quarterback down in the backfield. And then the very next play, Michigan has them bottled up again, and just Colson is about to like snap out there and get them, and he gets yanked backwards. And it's like, I mean, those kinds of plays where Michigan is about to have the tackle, and then the only reason it doesn't happen is a hold. And everyone sees there's a guy there, and then there's not a guy there, and then there's an edge. Like, I don't know how referees are not seen enough football to just know that that happened.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, they did miss a call on Green, where he was an important one in the end zone, where he had a handful of jersey. And
I don't think it affected
the play that much, but if you got a handful of jersey across the whole formation, it's
there were a couple instances I think on both sides of the line where they were like, okay, if that was actually close, then we might throw that flag.
But right.
And
yeah.
Like Michigan had a couple of those too. Where it's
sure,
like,
sure.
That could have been interference, but.
Yeah, there was one Henning was pretty mad about, I think, when it was a blitz and McNamara kind of just chucked it up in the air.
Mm.
And Henning was trying to like fight back to get to it.
Yeah, it was a functional back shoulder and he did get held, but
yeah.
He wasn't getting back to that ball.
Right.
So I was like, all right,
yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But yeah, a little bit, you know, at least on the defensive side of the ball, we were like, we have some concerns about the personnel.
Yeah.
Those largely bore out.
And like the concerns are more, they feel more fixable. I mean, the defensive tackles are the defensive tackles. But like Colson, I thought looked functional. Mullings got his first like real time in this game. And
well, Ross's injury was just a stinger, so
yeah.
I think that won't be a long term issue. But the thing that does
rankle from a coaching perspective was, again, just the, like, it's first down, we're playing Rutgers, we're giving up a 5-yard hitch, and we're not even close enough to tackle on the catch. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Taylor12man.jpg.gif. Same issue as on offense. They just didn't want to run anything for Rutgers. They were like,
what do you run? It's called cover two. You can't.
I mean,
are we worried about the hole shot from Noah Vedral?
They don't care who they're playing. This is just like it was like they went out and they were like playing NIU again. Like, I swear,
no,
I did not feel like Michigan had any preparation that was specifically for Rutgers on either side of the ball in this game.
That's a hot take. That's your raw take.
No, I got a rawer take than
that.
No, it's hot. We're hot takes now. We're going to have a new sponsor for that, and the takes have gotten hot.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back, and we're going to have a pretty juicy special teams and games theory segment, I think.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Sweet silver angels over the sea, please come down flying and low for me. One time I trusted a stranger because I heard his sweet song, and it was gently enticing me, though there was something wrong. But when I turned, he was gone. For me, he waits.
side. Though he chases him out windows and won't give him a place to hide, he keeps his door open wide.
I'm very excited because we're changing up the hot take segment because they just demanded that they had to do this. So here we go, guys. Seth! Jason Sklar! Randy Sklar! I need takes so hot they could be Michigan's first drive of the game and nothing else. Oh, God. All right, Seth, give me your hottest take. Seth, sit there silently and do nothing.
Damn it. No, I had it.
You had it? All right. Jason, give me your hottest take.
All right. Rutgers is going to win the same amount of games as Wisconsin this year.
All right. I got you.
I'm looking through. Wisconsin's already got two losses. I'm going to be bizarrely positive and think that we're going to beat them too. I looked at Rutgers' schedule and I'm like, they could be 7-5. So, you know, obviously we're not psyched about the second half, but, you know, better than Wisconsin is what Rutgers can walk
they
around
got,
and say.
They got some feistiness to them, the scarf.
They got the feistiness. Yeah. That's my hot take. And that'll destroy my voice.
All right. Randy, give me your hottest take.
All right. Kate McNamara will not throw an interception this year. And that is based on the fact that he's going to go 3-and-out on the first 5 possessions and drop below Alan Bowman on the depth chart.
Alan Bowman?
Yeah.
What? So McCarthy would play and then Bowman would? Be the same.
Yeah, so I'm saying that Cade McNamara is not going to throw an interception the whole year because he's going to go 3-and-out on his first 5 possessions at Wisconsin, and then he's going to not only drop below J.J. McCarthy on the depth chart, they're going to drop him below Alan Bowman.
You can tell that these guys guest host Jim Rome, right?
they've been around.
That's my hottest take.
That is very hot. Seth, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Seth, give me your hottest take.
Josh Gattis is from the John Donovan branch of the Ralph Regan coaching tree.
Good Lord.
I mean, I wrote about him in 2019 about all the coaches he coached under. And, like, you know, he spent a lot of time with James Franklin and Donovan at Vanderbilt and PSU. He had 2 years under Joe Moorhead. Does this look like a Joe Moorhead offense? Are they throwing verts a whole lot? Are they adjusting everything to the tendencies of their other team? And then he had 1 year under Mike Loxley, and I don't think they're doing a whole lot of two reads. They're not even doing one read, and they're not doing a whole lot of two backs. So, you know, what branch of the coaching tree would you say he's from?
I don't know. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Here's mine. In 3 weeks, Ohio State will have no scholarship linebackers. Yep. These guys are like the pebbles that start the avalanche. And there's going to be 2 linebackers who quit the team next week. 3 linebackers the week after and 4 the week after that. They'll be down to no scholarship linebackers. And they will still beat Michigan by like 60 points.
God, come on.
They'll be running out Tough Borland.
he's out. He's gone.
They're going to get him back. Is it going to be even slower this time?
They missed Tough Borland. They've been talking about how they need Tough Borland back. For
really?
His tough play inside, yes.
Steph, I had a Josh Gattis take, too, kind of in the back chamber as well. Josh Gattis is going to quit his job as an offensive coordinator and start writing for Law & Order because he's great at doing predictable things up the middle.
Wait, the Law & Order, they've got like half the episodes like, oh, no, it's not that guy. I know there's like 5 minutes left in the episode.
Yeah, there's always a twist.
There's a twist with five minutes
left in the episode. They run Blake Corum outside.
But you know when the twist is coming, and you know from whence it's coming, and you know that if someone looks like they're going to be the guy, they're not going to be the guy because you're 14 minutes into the episode.
All right. If you would like us to continue this very silly segment, you should subscribe to View from the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar's podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are provided. give them a 5-star rating, or we will stop your heart with our minds. No, I'm sorry. That was going too far.
Yeah.
Going too far.
Well, and also leave your hottest take in the comments section.
Yes.
Yes. Do that. Do that as well.
I'm looking forward to this. I want to see what everyone else can come up with.
I don't think you guys are going to win the title this week. I don't see anyone surpassing you.
We love you guys. We love this podcast. Anytime we love something, we like to single white female it and try to get inside and then be a part of it. But also, we are avid MGO Blog podcast listeners, and there's always a gap between when you release your breakdown of the game that was and then coming up during the week when you're previewing the next game or on the round table. And so we say to all of your fans who are waiting for the next MGO Blog podcast to drop, just listen to our podcast view from the cheap seats. It's the same genre, sports, comedy, all kinds of stuff. You guys have both done it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, the only comedy that we have is Seth trying to pronounce things. So
yeah. Michael
Seth,
Costa, you could have gotten him. They had him on their show last week.
Yeah, Michael Costa's great, but Seth, there was a moment a couple episodes ago where you called him Isaac Pacheco.
Oh God.
And I thought that was
he did that in this one. Too.
You didn't get enough grief from that on the show.
Well, now he has.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Tango.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Go blue.
Tonga Vailoa.
Tonga.
No, just stop.
Tonga.
Stop. All right, on to
special teams and
you know it's bad when like you're pressing your own temples when someone else does something bad.
which one are you talking? I want to know which one has like the deepest the temple impression.
Specifically the 4th and 10.
There we go. That was okay, good. I'm glad that was my number one. We should have gimmicky top five.
Hey, like I'm not going to dump on Greg Schiano, because Greg Schiano has clearly turned Rutgers into a program that is feisty.
Uh-huh.
They don't have any talent, right?
Do you think Schiano's going to pikele this team into being a contender in the Big Ten, or is this like
no, I mean this is Rutgers is never Max a contender in the Big Ten, but they'll be like they're not a doormat anymore.
I fear that they're going to be as annoying as Michigan State now.
No, in no way would that even be possible. Like physically, spiritually, mentally.
I mean, maybe they can be Michigan State to somebody else. Maybe they can
maybe they can be Michigan State to Michigan State.
That would be fantastic.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
But so I don't want to dump on Greg Schiano, who's clearly a very good coach who would have Tennessee in a better place than it currently is. but what are you doing? For one, you're Rutgers. For two, it's 4th and 10. That's not a good equation for you.
And you're passing downfield on your 4th and 10 idea.
That's what you had to do. If you get it, you have like 22 seconds and you're like on the Michigan 40.
Uh-huh.
I mean, questionable upside.
Right.
So, given all of that wrapped together, punt, clearly punt.
And you have, you know, arguably the number one punter in the country.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter, because if they punt, the half's over, right?
Right.
Because the worst case scenario for them, it's like a touchback and Michigan's not doing anything with 22 seconds and 80 yards. No. Oregon Chip Kelly would.
Yeah.
Not Michigan. And so they give Michigan the ball at like the 44 with 22 seconds remaining, and they immediately like rip off a huge play.
Yep.
But that's
on an RPO.
Yeah, but even so, like 22 seconds, that kind of position, there's a fairly good chance you're giving up a field goal attempt. And to exchange that for like maybe we, the Rutgers cable subscribers, will convert a 4th and 10, just doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, Rutgers did go for it on 4th down. Correctly just about every time in mm-hmm. very annoying ways. Having Langan as your Tebow quarterback is useful.
Yeah. I mean, that we do that too with Velarde to a degree, but I mean, we don't really use it because we didn't go for it on our 4th and 1.
Also, you have like Haskins, and I don't want Dan Velarde carrying the ball on 4th and 1, right? We have better options.
Yeah. I mean,
what was the other like incredibly...
Michigan going for taking a delay a game on their 4th and 1 instead of going for it.
I mean, that's just like standard coach goofery. Like,
oh my God. But the only thing Michigan could do was get 1 yard every single play. So Like, I mean, and then they, and then running for it on third and eight, like that was a game decision as well. Just running the clock all the time, like having that those long possessions where you're running the clock out. If you think you're a better team than Rutgers, why are you increasing the? We've gone over this a gazillion times, but like the fewer drives you have, the more likely of an upset, right? The more opportunities you have with the ball, if you're the better team, it's going to average out better. And I don't know how they don't understand this already.
Well, I wonder, because if you score in 2 minutes and you're up 7-0 and you're a favorite,
mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
If you score in half a quarter and you're up 7-0 and you're a favorite, yes, there's some more variance because there are going to be fewer possessions, but there's also less time for them to catch up. So to me, if you can actually do it, yeah, that might be worth doing. You know, the can you actually do it part in this game was
the problem. I mean, even so, you want to have a couple quick drives. Their second drive was great. They ran play action. They got the ball down there. They got back up to the line and they ran another play. Like, but that's what you need to do against these bad teams. You have to be able to score quickly, get a lead, and then you can grind it out to your heart's content.
Well, that's what they had. They had 17-point lead and they were like, let's grind. Oh. It's not really working.
Yeah, well, you need more than a 17-point lead, and they only had how many possessions did they have in the first half? 3? 4?
I don't know.
There were not many opportunities for them to score. Period. So that like they shortened the game. And if you shorten the game against Rutgers, Oklahoma just found this out against Nebraska. When you shorten the game against one of these teams, then it's fewer opportunities for your talent to win out. Now, were they the better team? Because I don't know if I would have survived another 3 or 4 possessions in this game. But like game theory wise, I still believe it, and I wanted to make sure that I put that out there because it was still a thing.
Yeah, there was the one they went for a fourth. Rutgers went for a fourth down, and the first half, this is their first points, and then they found themselves in a similar situation, about 10 yards closer,
mm-hmm.
and they elected for the field goal there.
Right,
and that was like
I was happy they took the field goal, which means it was the bad decision,
yeah, probably. Yeah.
But they also, I mean, they had some weird ideas of how to get their fourth and ones instead of just running Vedrill again, which was working. So they put Pacheco under center instead.
Okay, that's the other one that we should talk about. Which, all right, they're doing the like coach, I don't know, and then Pacheco
right.
shoots up the line of scrimmage, and it didn't work. And everybody was real mad about it that it didn't work.
Well, it didn't work because Hutchinson saw what was going on and jumped in there, and then he dropped the ball.
Hinton did too. And
yeah.
So he got a guy shoved back into him and fumbled the ball, and so Michigan had a good response for that, but mm-hmm. yeah, they probably should have just run the ball, right? Like
if they put Noah Vedrill in there and just ran another inverted veer,
Langan was the one doing
it. Langan. If they put Langan in there and just ran another inverted veer, I would.
Vedrill was also picking up yards on the ground too, so like.
Yeah, yeah. So, I as the person on the other side of it, that's what I would have hated more than trying trickeration stuff. And what was the other one they did? They had another goofy thing they tried to do, and Michigan stopped it. I think I have to go back and look at the play. It was like just a weird design play that they were trying to run.
Oh, they had the Emery and Henry that actually converted, but it was an illegal formation.
Right, right.
The entire pod to the top of the screen was like not on the line.
No one was on the line, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that one worked, I guess, but it also felt like just like, why bother?
Yeah. Yeah. And then we got 5 after the Schoonmaker miss, right? You have 5 seconds left. It's third down.
Oh, yeah. That didn't make any sense to me because you can definitely throw a fade in less than 5 seconds.
Right. The Schoonmaker play was 4 seconds, and that was with the clock
that's
running.
Play action and like.
Right.
I mean, like, if right, you just so, drop back and or just throw a slant, like that.
Yeah.
And you've got timeout, right? So if something does happen where you get sacked or somehow don't score a touchdown on a completed pass, you just call timeout. So I was like, they should have run that play.
Yeah.
That was another disappointment.
I mean, I was madder about it just because there are certain things that I'm like, okay, I'm used to that because I lived through the Carr era. And Lloyd Carr would have gone and fought for a second there. And whether he got it or not, at least I think he would have gone for it. I don't think he would have kicked a field goal there. So if you're getting more conservative than Lloyd Carr, that's when you tripped a line for me.
Yeah.
Another hot take.
Special teams. Brad Robbins had an excellent game where he had a punt that took a left turn and headed out of bounds with the three and then celebrated like he had given birth to Jesus Christ. And in, you know, punting terms, that's basically right.
Yeah, and everyone celebrated with him. I loved it.
Yeah.
I think I said he was a pumpter.
I'm sorry, do you know who that is? He's like supposed to be like the savior of mankind.
Him?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a Jew born on Christmas. Someone's told me him.
I wasn't talking about Brad Robbins, by the way.
No, I'm talking about the other Jew born on Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then AJ Henning again demonstrated that he was an excellent punt returner who should continue doing the things.
Yeah, putting
Michigan got away with the hell of a block in the back that they picked up for mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that block mm-hmm. live, and I was like, "Yep, that's a flag."
Yep. And then they the flag comes out,
and then they put it up on the board, and everybody was like, and I was like, I was waiting for the holding call the next play.
Yeah,
I was like, "All right, where's the makeup call?" And I guess the makeup call was the roughing the passer.
Yeah.
A little bit later in the game.
Yeah,
which was pretty weak.
The announcers were terrible about that because like their roughing the passer was a very obvious one. I mean
it was targeting.
Yeah, it was targeting, and I had no problem with them calling targeting on that when I know every single targeting needs like a you know a court case.
Yeah,
but. But then the announcers were likening that hit to that one. And Hill Green, like, was in the air when the ball is thrown and then comes down on the quarterback. And, like, doesn't give him, like, that much. But, like, you're supposed to get, like, an extra shove. If you get to the quarterback and you're already in the air when he releases the ball, you've earned your shot.
You're like, bleh.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, come on. So.
And then Blake Corum almost broke a couple of kick returns, and then Rutgers decided they were going to pop it up to JT Barrett.
Right.
JT Barrett.
JT Barrett. Michael Barrett.
Sorry, guys. Just, that was...
We haven't seen him much this year, so that's
memories for everybody that I just made.
You are the king of bringing up Michigan.
No, you
past.
Are.
No,
you
you're
are.
The one who's been doing it this year.
No.
Yes.
You're always like, hey, you remember that? And I'm like, no.
I'm not going to do
it. But
now
I do.
I'm not going to do it right now.
Good.
Because four of them just popped in my mind, and I said, no, Seth.
All right. Absolute yuts. All right, I think we should probably talk to Jamie.
Sure.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable.
Communication.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess. You use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Your good intentions, your gay politics, can you get over it? Get over it. The implications of your parents' address, can you get over it? Get over it. Your metaphors, your sense of meter and rhyme, can you get over it? Get over it. Your Catholic taste, your ways of wasting your time, can you get over it? Get over it. Boy, you've been so lost in your head, dreaming so long you never got out of bed. There's no reason why I saw you have said that all the things that you've been trying to get haven't happened.
Welcome in, Jamie Anker, Jeff Cut. You know what? We're just going to leave it in, and we're going to call it the Minnesota Bowling Green game.
Yeah.
And that's it. We're leaving it in.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, Minnesota 10, Bowling Green 14.
Oh, wow. You know, I actually didn't know what to put on my second TV next to the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game. I put this on just to see how it would go, and It never left the TV, the second TV. I couldn't believe it. You can't even begin to explain how bad Bowling Green was coming into this game. They entered on an 8-game losing streak. Before they had beaten Murray State last week, they had been on a 10-game losing streak, 8 of which were to MAC foes, and the average margin of defeat was 37.2 points.
So
they weren't even coming within 5 touchdowns of MAC teams over the course of 2 seasons, really. And
they rushed for a total of 24 yards. And
yeah,
they won.
Yeah, I mean we got I was getting a lot of messages when it happened. I was actually not watching the game, but all of a sudden, a lot of people in this text thread of like former players and former Michigan coaches that I somehow snuck my way into.
You're such a name dropper.
Starts blowing up because there's all sorts of former Michigan people who are on this staff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Scott Loeffler is the head coach, and he's got Cato June working for him. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's got Terry Malone as his offensive coordinator. He's got Steve Morrison as his associate head coach.
Right.
Soup Campbell is there as the passing game coordinator. And like you said, Cato June is the coach's linebackers and is the defensive run game coordinator.
Yeah. So this was when we were complaining about, you know, car calls, the car people were actually out there running Minnesota out of did they get a brown jug for that?
No, they were not running Minnesota out of anything. They didn't even get 200 yards of offense.
Yeah.
But Tanner Morgan was 5 of 13 for 59 yards with 2 interceptions, no touchdowns. So and I think Rashad Bateman is no longer in town.
He was also sacked 5 times.
Mm-hmm. How's that even possible?
So, you know, you're looking at 18 dropbacks there. I mean, he may have had a couple scrambles, but let's forget about those. That's 18 dropbacks, and he had 7 were either sacks or interceptions. And here are their fourth quarter passes. They had a 2-yard pass that was thrown behind the line of scrimmage that gained 2 yards. Sack for 9 yards, 9-yard loss. Incomplete, interception. Interception. Those are their fourth quarter dropbacks.
I mean, the last interception, too, that was just a good play by Bowling Green. Like, they were playing up to their competition. But I remember Minnesota taking some other team to the wire this year. Was it Ohio's?
Well, no. Actually, yeah, it was Miami of Ohio.
Okay.
two weeks ago. But it's actually a trend. With Fleck at Minnesota, this is the 5th straight.
I think what
game
Seth was trying
to
reference
a group of 5 team that's been a 1-score game, and they've been able to escape the others.
Jamie,
I think he got it. I think he was rolling with it.
Was he?
Yeah.
All right, my bad.
Jamie, were you rolling with it or not?
Was I rolling with what?
That Minnesota had a second half lead against Ohio State, is what he's referencing.
Oh no, I'm referencing the fact that they almost lost to Miami of Ohio 2 weeks ago.
He's talking about Bowling Green, though.
And how Fleck, Minnesota always seems to underachieve in these group of five games. It's the fifth straight game against a group of five opponent where it's been a single score game, and it finally came up and bit him. You know, they just underachieve in these games. I don't even understand it. They just run the ball all the time to Potts. Sometimes they get 6 yards, sometimes they get 2 yards, and then every time they had to throw the ball, they got sacked. It was just embarrassing.
Yeah, so Minnesota, not that good right now. We can safely say that.
I mean,
the most
Kenneth Morgan has been their starter for like almost 4 years. You think they would trust him to do more, but they don't. And they just sort of backed themselves into a corner in this game. The fourth quarter was kind of ridiculous. Bowling Green had a drive that lasted over 6 minutes in the fourth quarter that got extended by two special teams penalties by Minnesota. And they didn't score on the drive. They ended up losing a fumble at like the Minnesota 8. And now there's only like 7 minutes to go in the game. And then Minnesota takes a 4 minute drive to gain 25 yards, basically all run plays. Like there's a fifth quarter or something. It's just, I mean, it almost looked like they were trying to lose on purpose.
We don't play either of these teams, so I don't think we need to stay on this game any longer.
All right. Next week's opponent, Wisconsin, in probably the most deceptive final score of the week. Scores 13 points to Notre Dame's 41. Wisconsin led 13-10 in the fourth quarter, and then Notre Dame got a kick return touchdown, got an actual offensive touchdown, got a field goal, and then picked Graham Mertz off for pick sixes twice. So that's how you get to from 13-10 to 41-13 in under a quarter. Yeah. The story here is Wisconsin does not have
a passing game.
They don't have a running game.
They don't have a game on offense.
Like the Wisconsin never-ending running back factory is down to some guy named Malusi.
Jeez.
Yeah. His name is like Shay Malusi. And like, that's not
if you're CHEZ and you play for Wisconsin, you have to be going by Cheese.
Or Chez.
Chez. Shit.
And like, so he.
Homage Malusi.
He has a long of 10 in this game, 18 carries, 54 yards against the Notre Dame front seven that did not start its starting nose tackle and had not actually performed that well to date. Like, Notre Dame's been struggling.
Yeah. Speaking of teams who had a little trouble against Mac. Opponents.
Yeah, and so for Wisconsin and their vaunted running game to come in here and to fart out under 100 yards is like, it's got to be like all hands on deck for panic.
Well, when they put the ball in Graham Mertz's hand at the end too, like that's when those pick six started happening. So like one of them was he had a receiver out way on the edge and he goes to chuck it out there and you're used to those balls getting out there pretty fast and it did not get out there very fast. So if that's the arm that like Wisconsin finally has, it's not that much of an arm.
Yeah, no. And I think that it's just also become a predictable team, too, on offense. I mean, go back to the opening loss against Penn State. Remember, Jaquan Brisker said afterwards that they kind of knew what they were going to run, especially on those key plays at the end of the game. And yesterday, I mean, Notre Dame was all over the slants. You know, you're referencing the plays at the end of the game, but in the first half, he threw a slant at Notre Dame. It looked like the Notre Dame DB was the primary defender. He had it sniffed it out so well. But they also were all those little tiny little bootleg action, short pass stuff that Wisconsin does. Notre Dame was all over that stuff yesterday. You know, Mertz had to ditch a couple screen passes, another screen pass he had to throw away out of bounds. And then there was another third and two where they were going to try to do that. And the blitzing linebacker came in and batted the ball right back into his face. So, I mean, it just looked like, again, against an equal opponent, they knew what was coming, Notre Dame. And you have to remind yourself that Paul Chryst is not only now the play caller for this team, but he's also the quarterback coach. And Mertz, you know, you guys were talking about the lack of running game. There's obviously some bad stats about that, but Mertz 0-5 now in starts versus ranked opponents. Wisconsin scores during those games, 7, 6, 7, 10, and 13. He's accounted for 16 turnovers in those contests. 11 picks, 5 lost fumbles. He's been sacked 12 times. And, you know, he's only got a 5.3 yard per pass in those games. He just...
Yeah, but let's not get cocky. Michigan's coming to town.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the other thing is that, like, Notre Dame's line has been complete butt this year. But they gave up 6 sacks to Wisconsin. Jack Cohn got knocked out of this game. And Kyren Williams, their running back, had 33 yards on 18 carries.
Yeah.
So if Michigan is like thinking that they're going to roll in and Northern Illinois, this team, that's not going to happen. And given what we saw against Rutgers.
Yeah. Well, Wisconsin at least sits back. And their concern was those defensive ends, which I was kind of weirdly mad at Notre Dame for not attacking them very much. Because they... Remember the 2018 game? That was their problem. They had like a walk-on out there, and the other guy was Isaiah Loudermilk, who was hurt. Loudermilk's gone, Rand's gone, and that walk-on is the guy who's starting now. And, I mean, they're a little bit weak at that position, and I thought Notre Dame, weirdly, was not attacking them, and that was one of the reasons why other teams have had success against Wisconsin's defense. The rest of them, I think their pass defense is vastly underrated this year. They've been doing pretty really well, and then when they complete something, it's like well contested and it's just kind of, you know, a little bit bad luck. So I think that they're I did not want them to feel like angry because they just lost a close game to Notre Dame after this one.
Well, they got a lot of things to figure out if they're, I mean, that defense is going to be tough still, but like they are not Wisconsin of old. Anything else worth talking about this week? Oh right, Nebraska 20 Michigan State 23 and like one of the most absurd second half performances in a victory I've ever seen. All right, here are Michigan State's second half drives. Three plays, 8 yards, punt. Three plays, 5 yards, punt. Three plays, -1 yards, punt. Three plays, -7 yards, punt. Three plays, 9 yards, punt. And they won.
Wow.
That was their whole second half. They did not get a first down in the second half.
Well, they also only scored in the first half because of the flea flicker.
Well, they got a couple field goals, but yeah.
Yeah, but like the. I mean, go ahead.
Do we have to argue with Michigan State fans on Twitter now about who had the worst second half offensive performance?
Probably.
Because I mean, I felt like it was like watching the Michigan second half. You know, it was just like, you know.
We can all Spider-Man point at each other right now and just have a détente between the two teams until we're both kind of rolling in very, very weakly at undefeated and. I don't think that we can be any more or less proud of our game against Rutgers than they are against Nebraska.
And then the only reason this game actually gets to overtime, because Nebraska has the ball and they're moving the ball, is that they shoot themselves the foot repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then one of the strangest punt return touchdowns I've ever seen, where it looks like Michigan State puts – did they put two guys back on that?
They did.
Because they're all going at the guy who's not getting the ball.
Well,
and Jaden Reed just catches the ball and he's like, okay, and then he just runs in a straight line to the end zone. I'm like, what is going on?
The punter punted it in the wrong direction, according to the Nebraska people after the game. He was supposed to punt it in the direction that his coverage was going, and he somehow got it mixed up.
That seems like a big risk to take, you know, because like I've seen punts go anywhere. You remember the punt where they punted it? Where Northwestern punted it, and it was like a 4-yard punt, and nobody touched it, and Pat Fitzgerald was running down the sideline, and his soul left his body.
Yeah,
like that happens. You can't you can't just tell the punter to punt it on that side of the field. That's not how it works.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what they were trying to execute. And you know, Nebraska, they've been in the bottom third the last 2 years in special teams in the S&P rankings. And it's been kind of like a whack-a-mole bugaboo problem all over again this year. You know, they've had a couple of games where they can't kick field goals. They've had a couple of games where they can't field a punt. They can never punt the ball well. I mean, the punting stats in this game, the Michigan State punter averaged like well over 50 yards a punt, and the Nebraska two punters could barely get to 32 yards. This is every week where there's like a 20-yard advantage there. And then yesterday, that whole return thing, I mean, I don't know why you're telling a punter to punt it in a certain direction. It boggles my mind. According to the Bill Conley's postgame win expectancy, Nebraska had a 70% chance at winning that game yesterday.
I mean, it felt like a lot. It felt like
and
more than that.
They were 74% in their loss to Illinois earlier this year. And they do this like 2, 3, 4 times a year where they have a postgame win expectancy that's sky high. So,
well, and then like
look out for that to happen again.
Like an idiot, I tell all the people around me, like, okay, Nebraska's got a much better red zone offense, so if this goes to overtime, Nebraska's fine. And then Adrian Martinez drops back and throws an interception that, like, is almost returned for the winning score. Like,
Yep.
They took over. They took over the second half, though. I mean,
yeah, this was like,
you know, they looked really good at times on offense. You know, Martinez seems to have something going with both his tight ends. All those new face receivers are kind of beginning to show some form. You know, even they ran the ball a little bit better than I thought they would yesterday. They had some couple option pitches out there with Raheem Johnson, but they just can't. They can't stop shooting themselves in the foot, and they can't. Their offensive line. They must have a contest going on between them, who can commit the most penalties and also who can allow the most sacks. Because, I mean, they've allowed now 17 sacks in their three games against Power Five opponents. And I know last week against Oklahoma, the offensive line had 7 penalties, and they had 6 penalties yesterday, the offensive line. So it's just kind of the same old, even when they look good, like the last 2 weeks, they just make enough mistakes that keep them from winning.
Yeah, they've taken the Sparty no throne from Sparty, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they just find ways to not do it.
But this should throw some cold water, though, on that offensive renaissance that everybody was talking about for Michigan State.
They played
a disciplined defense that checked the cutback lane, so Walker couldn't get going. I felt like they got after Thorne a little bit, and then especially after the first half, they couldn't get anything going.
Yeah.
And like Seth referenced, the only time they could really find the end zone was on a flea flicker. And that's the second time they've done that this year.
Yeah. Iowa 24, Colorado State 14 in a game where neither team gets to 300 yards total offense. And this was just so ugly for the Iowa ground game. 54 yards on 32 rushing attempts. Now, their defense did a number on Colorado State, but I mean, this has got to be the worst top five team of all time.
Right?
I mean, probably not, but
right.
I mean, can't Michigan believe was top four. Well, I don't need to
bring that up. I can't. I cannot believe that this is the number five team in the country.
Iowa's best offensive player in this game was true freshman Keegan Johnson, who didn't have a single catch coming into the game.
Yeah,
that tell you the kind of answers they're looking for on offense, and they needed his two big catches in this game, or they would have been in even more trouble.
They were playing really conservative against stack boxes. Like, that was their entire game was basically Michigan versus Rutgers in the second half, until they decided, okay, let's try to throw down the field, even though that's very un-Iowa to do so. And, you know, lo and behold, they got a couple plays out of it. But I don't want to take too much away from it. That was Iowa. That was just Iowa, you know, Iowa-ing a game away.
I mean, Colorado State pretty much handed them a touchdown. They fumbled at their own 6.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That allowed Iowa to tie it up. They were losing 14-7 at half, and Iowa's touchdown actually came on one of the big, big passes to Keegan Johnson that I referenced. So, I mean, they were trying for deep balls early in the game. They just can't run the football. You know, they've got, I think, an electric talent back there in Tyler Goodson, but he's only averaging 4.5 yards per carry on the season. But
and they've got like the best center in the country, too, in Linderbaum.
If we play, you know, let's take a couple carries away. He had that 56-yard carry on his first touch against Indiana. His second longest run is a 27-yarder that he had yesterday at the end of the first quarter. You take those two runs out, and he's below 3.5 yards a carry. They're not really settled on their offensive line outside of Linderbaum at center. They've had a couple injuries that's forced their hand up there a little bit, but they don't really have a great ground game to lean on, and somewhere along the way, somebody's going to force Petras to beat them. And I just don't think it's going to work out for the Hawkeyes. And, you know, their game coming up against Penn State. I mean, that's going to be ugly, ugly offense. Iowa, Penn State, Iowa, Wisconsin. Those are going to be high profile games. They're going to look ugly.
Yep. All right. Indiana 33, Western Kentucky 31. Michael Penix gets back on his horse. And this is a chaos team game where he is barely able to outrun Western Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it took him 53 passes to get there. Like, this was not a high average for Penix. This was like, you know, they are putting the entire offense on his back now.
Yeah, they are. They ran 92 plays to Western Kentucky's 64. And like you said, 53 were passes by Penix. Indiana scored on their first 6 drives, but the last 4 of those, they had to settle for field goals. Had they been a little bit more efficient in the red zone, they might have been able to get some distance between them. And then Western Kentucky kind of executed the score touchdown at the end of the half, then take the first drive of the second half and score a touchdown. So all of a sudden it was 23-21, and then they settled for that fourth field goal in a row that I talked about. It was 26-21. You kind of think that, man, this game should not be within 5 points, but it is. And it was pretty much close down to the wire the whole way from there.
Yeah, I mean, Tuan Mullen was fantastic again, but I think that their second cornerback has been a lot worse than people expected them to be. And, like, a lot of the tricks that they used last year to, I guess, cover for some of the holes in their defense, they're just not thrown out there, or they're not getting away with anymore. So I wonder if we'd done a draft again this year, who would have gotten Penix and who would have gotten Talia Tagovailoa, and I know I just botched the name again, but
Tagovailoa.
Can we just move on to the Maryland game since
just
we're doing this?
No, we're not. The Maryland game goes in the poo-poo platter of games that we're not really paying attention to. They include Ohio State 59, Akron 7, Maryland 37, Kent State 16, Northwestern 35, Ohio 6, how bad is Ohio, and Penn State 38, Nova 17. Also, Illinois-Purdue. That's just a non-conference game that we don't need to pay attention to. All right, fine. Illinois 13. No.
Oh, we're doing it.
Purdue 13, Illinois 9. All right.
That game.
I mean, that says enough right there, doesn't it?
Illinois is 1-4 with a victory over Nebraska. Brett Bielema punted on 4th-and-2 from the Boilermakers 34-yard line.
Yes, with a running back that had already gained over 150 yards. I mean, yeah.
That is just, why are we even playing here?
Right.
Like, come on.
Come on, Bert.
Bert.
Yeah, well, Purdue also used two different quarterbacks in this game. And,
yeah.
Maybe found something with Aiden O'Connell. I mean, he threw two interceptions, but, like, he seemed, like, a little bit more confident than...
Didn't he star in the Fox science fiction vehicle Sliders?
Sure.
That's Jerry O'Connell. Anyway, that's what I had to say about this game. I had to get in my Sliders reference.
Now that you've got your Sliders references, are we done with the Big Ten, or are there any more games?
No, that's it.
Okay.
So you want to talk about Devon Pope?
Devon Pope.
The Ohio State linebacker who quit in the middle of the game.
Oh,
night.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's kind of their...
They're really fine.
He's maybe their fourth option, you know, but he had 24 snaps against Tulsa when one of their starters was out, but anytime one of Ohio State's players starts tweeting at the team during the game, I kind of like that. I like that.
They'll be fine.
Yeah, they started a guy in week one, a linebacker who already transferred. So
Tony Gansk's nephew.
So it's it's like, I mean, I don't think so, but you know, there's some cracks in the foundation, I guess. Yeah.
They're basically throwing all in with like 2020 and 2021 recruits. I mean, that's just how they're going to roll in a lot of spots right now, especially on defense. And that's why Gant transferred, because he was losing time to underclassmen. I presume that's why Pope was all.
I kind of think the transfer portal should be closed until your season is over, right? Like,
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit interested in seeing how Rutgers plays Ohio State. I mean,
I'm just like the Michigan team, that I can't get my hopes up too high. Even if I can like them, I don't have to like be hopeful. And I can do the same with Ohio State. I can kind of like roll into every game expecting Ohio State to just Ohio State people to death. Right. And then they'll get in a game with Rutgers, and then we'll be like all excited for a moment. And then they'll throw a pass to Olave, and throw a pass to Jared, and throw a pass to the other receiver they got. And it'll be, you know, a 35-point explosion in the fourth quarter, and they'll be over. But
yeah, you almost feel like their defensive deficiencies need to be even more severe for us to jump on the bandwagon that somebody else might win the Big Ten, for example. Because when they have the ball, I mean, they can literally just press the touchdown play, it seems, at any time.
Well, the good news is there is an opening.
Their freshman running back, Henderson, is legit.
The good news is there's an opening in the playoffs this year, because Clemson decided to lose their second game.
Yeah, that was nice to see.
Yep. Yeah, the national events were quite interesting, except for Georgia actually looks legit this year.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're out of Big Ten.
Yes. Before we go, can I mention one note? It's going to go all the way back to the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game. But
sure.
It'll be worth it. This is per Elias. Notre Dame scored 31 fourth quarter points yesterday. That tied for the most points ever scored by a team in the fourth quarter against an AP-ranked opponent since the poll began in 1936. Do you know who they tied with?
No.
The other team that scored 31 points against an AP-ranked team in the fourth quarter?
Was it Michigan State-Northwestern game?
Oh, no, no, no. Oh. Way closer to home. Way closer to home.
Was it Northwestern in 2001?
No. It's a good memory. It's a closer-to-home good memory.
Oh, is it the Buffalo Stampede game?
Yes, it is.
Oh!
Bam!
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I said just one note, but I got a second one because we talked about Bowling Green and Scott Loeffler.
Loeffler.
They tried a Buffalo Stampede play in the second half of that game with Minnesota, and they airmailed it over the quarterback's head, incomplete. But they completed a 25-yard pass on the next play for first and goal to set up their go-ahead touchdown anyway. But
it's called
Buffalo
Transcontinental.
Came up twice yesterday in the noon window.
The play has a name. It's called the Transcontinental.
Yes, but I really
oh, that's right.
It's be something else.
Transcontinental.
All right, Jamie. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. And that, people, is why you have to read MGO Blog.
S-I-L-L, Jesus was a cross maker.
Oh, perfect.
Those are my two.
Perfect. We actually brought up Jesus in this one.